The beautiful, musical romantic period is typically thought of as extending from around 1800 to 1900, a period of about 100 years. In setting dates on these time periods, it's important to remember that when midnight January 1st, 1800 rolled around, all the composers didn't rip off their powdered wigs and start composing in the romantic style. Some of the composers were composing in the romantic style several years before 1800. Others were composing in the old classic style many years after 1800. Some composers wrote in both the classic and romantic styles in the same piece. So when we say around 1800 to 1900, we mean just that, around 1800 to 1900. It is also important to remember, as we study musical time periods, that style periods are formulated after they occur, not before. A musical theorist did not call all musicians together in the year 1800 and say, "Okay, Ludwig, Hector, Johannes, and Franz, and the rest of you guys, from now on, no one composes in the classic style. We're going to compose in a new style, and we'll call it romantic." No one did that. What music theorists and historians really do is look back and say, "Wow, look at all these fascinating things that have happened during the last 100 years. Then they look for general trends and patterns. They figure out what most of the composers were doing most of the time, even though none of the composers were doing all of it at any other time. As you read different books on the time periods, you may find that different historians disagree as to what was really going on. That is because they're making conclusions and generalizations based on their own perspective. It's kind of like two historians being asked to describe a large house. One saw only the inside, the other saw only the outside. Their descriptions would be quite different. What matters most is that something is said at all, not that people disagree. Then you, in your study of music, have a point of departure, a place to start making your own conclusions about what was happening. Then you can begin intelligently interpreting your own music that you perform. On this tape, we will discuss three areas of the Romantic period. The first is historical events of the Romantic period. The second is musical trends, and the third is famous composers. I have selected four historical events out of the countless ones we could meaningfully study. The first, Abraham Lincoln was president of the United States and led his country in a civil war. No doubt you have heard of him. In 1849, the California Gold Rush began. People with their hearts set on a new life began moving west to find new homes and new experiences. The Wild West, with its cowboys and outlaws, was pretty tame by the end of the 1800s and the end of the Romantic period. I mention these two American events because it gives an indication of what was going on musically in America. People in America were so busy fighting, reconstructing, pioneering, and building a country that they did not have much time or money to be creating great works of art. America needed to wait until the 1890s, when the Industrial Revolution and great prosperity came to America, before things really started to happen in a great artistic way. The second historical event that we'll discuss is that travel became much easier and faster for people with the invention of the steam engine. We now had things like steamboats and trains. We have a tendency to look back and think of travel as very slow during the 1800s. And according to our standards, where we can fly across the country in a few hours, it was slow. But they thought they were really moving fast at 30 miles per hour. And they were, if you compared them to the speed of travel during the classic period. Consequently, composers and musicians were much freer to travel, visit one another, and hear concerts in a different country. Music academies and competitions sprung up in many parts of Europe. The third historical event is the increased communication of the age with the invention of the telegraph, telephone, motion pictures, and an improved postal system. The advances in communication and travel had an effect on music in that composers and musicians could travel and communicate more than ever before. Ideas were exchanged and new things tried. You would think with all the increase in travel and communication that the music would be cosmopolitan, as in the classic period, where they were seeking to speak a message of peace through a universal language. This did not occur in the Romantic period. As travel and communication increased, many composers became very nationalistic, they sought to write their music in a way that was distinct from other countries' music. We will discuss this trend towards nationalism later on. The fourth and final historical event that we will discuss is the Industrial Revolution. It began in England and through the 1800s spread to many parts of the world. More people had more money than ever before. Governments felt responsible to educate their citizens. With a rise in education and money, people wanted to enjoy more of the privileges of the wealthy. They wanted music that was once the privilege of the aristocracy and their courts. So, concerts and musicians went public. Musicians no longer worked for the kings and queens that catered to their taste. The people had the money, and the musicians played tunes to suit the piper. Did this have an effect on the music? You bet it did. If these musicians wanted to stay alive, they needed to write music the people enjoyed. Consequently, the Romantic period produced music that is probably the easiest to understand and enjoy by the lay or uneducated musician. Even the way the music was performed changed. Conductors, pianists, and many other instrumentalists became great and flashy showmen and dazzled their audiences with their musicianship and their showmanship. Why, the great pianist Franz Liszt, when he played, women would not only throw flowers on stage, they would throw themselves as well. In review then, we have discussed four historical events: Abraham Lincoln and the taming of the Wild West, increased travel, increased communication, and the Industrial Revolution, which gave rise to a music-consuming public. We are now ready to pursue the musical trends of the Romantic period. Many of the musical trends of the Romantic period can be explained or attached to one grand trend or delusion. We will call our first trend the Beethoven complex, or reaching for the unobtainable. Because Beethoven was such a great composer and overwhelming person, many musicians felt they had to compete with or become better than Beethoven. Brahms postponed writing a symphony for years because he felt he just couldn't measure up to what Beethoven had accomplished. Other musicians just fell into the current of the times. So, many thought that this was the key to success, to be like Beethoven or better than Beethoven, to reach for the unobtainable. Now, what does reaching for the unobtainable have to do with Beethoven anyway? You may recall, Beethoven never married, although he wanted to. Every woman he loved didn't love him. That's the way it seems to go sometimes. And the ones that wanted to marry Beethoven, Beethoven didn't want to have anything to do with. So here we have an example of Beethoven wanting to have something, but through fate was unable to receive it. Beethoven wanted children, but never had any. He wanted to be a great pianist, and was, but lost his hearing, and was thus unable to concertize anymore. He turned to composition, but never heard his greatest works performed because, once again, he was deaf. Fate had dealt him a dirty blow. He reached for so many things that he was unable to obtain. What a tragedy! You can see why we associate Beethoven with the reaching for the unobtainable. Many thought that it was this one element that made him so great, the tragedy of his life, the struggling against fate. They, in their lives and music, began reaching for the unobtainable. Some became very eccentric or strange in the way they pursued this curious vision of greatness. Now, when you reach for something that is out of your grasp, what happens? Try it. Try reaching for the wall furthest away from you without leaving your seat. Notice how you stretch. The harder you try and touch that wall without leaving your seat, the more you stretch and strain. Well, this is what happened to music and many of the other arts. Nearly everything stretched or grew bigger. For example, orchestras grew in size from 20 to 25 players in the early classic period to gigantic symphonies of Mahler, Strauss, and Berlioz. Mahler wanted a symphony of 1,000. Berlioz envisioned the ideal orchestra to include 240 string players, 30 grand pianos, 30 harps with wind, brass, and percussion to match. Can you imagine putting all those instruments in one concert hall? Where would the audience sit? The symphony itself was about 20 to 30 minutes in length. At the end of the period, it was not uncommon to have a symphony of 1.5 hours or more. Operas went from several hours in length to several days, as in Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle. So the Beethoven complex, with its reaching for the unobtainable, caused nearly everything to grow. The size of the orchestras, instruments, and length of the concerts were not the only things that grew out of this complex. The elements of music themselves were also stretched. The elements of music are things like melody, rhythm, harmony, and tone color. Now that last element I mentioned, tone color, is a doozy of a word, isn't it? Music exists in our mind. It has no color. If everything around you was painted the same shade of black, including you, you would not see anything. Everything would be the same. What a blah world. As we add another color like white, things begin to have more interest. We see details that we would never have seen with everything painted black. Add even more colors, and it is as if we were Dorothy stepping from our black and white house into the colorful, beautiful land of Oz. Musical sounds are sometimes called colors. If all music sounded like this, it would be like having everything painted black. Now, black is a beautiful color. This is a beautiful note. But if everything was like that, it would be pretty dull after a while. But as we add more sounds and different kinds of sounds, we enter a musical land of Oz. Composers of the Romantic Age were anxious to experiment with lots of different sounds and add them to their tonal watercolor box. They tried new ways of playing the instruments. For example, on the piano, many composers experimented with the use of the pedal. Listen to a nocturne by Frédéric Chopin, first without the damper pedal. Now listen to it again, with the pedal this time. Notice the dreamy, blurry effect it achieves. Rarely would you hear the piano used like this in the classic period. Other devices used to achieve different colors on the piano were playing very high or very low, or with big chords with lots of notes, like this famous prelude, also by Frédéric Chopin. Harmony, like tone color, also expanded. Composers began using new chords called chromatic chords and new scales called exotic scales to help achieve an even greater range of expression. So the Beethoven complex, reaching for the unobtainable, caused nearly everything to grow. A second musical trend was the desire of many musicians to associate literature with music. This helped composers to compose longer pieces and helped to unify them. Some examples of pieces that use literary ideas are Smetana's The Moldau. This is a piece for orchestra about a river that runs through Czechoslovakia. Music that associates itself with literary ideas or tells a story is often called program music. Program music has been written in nearly every musical time period, but it received renewed emphasis during the Romantic period. Many of these storytelling pieces for orchestra were called tone poems. Liszt wrote many tone poems. One of the most famous is about Faust, a man who sells his soul to the devil. Hector Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique is a story about himself. The symphony is in five movements or sections. The first movement is called Daydreams and is about the composer finding the girl of his dreams. However, true to the Beethoven complex, this tortured soul is unable to have the girl of his dreams. In the second and third movements, called The Ball and The Country Scene, the composer goes to a dance and other places. But wherever he goes, he imagines seeing his beloved girlfriend. In the fourth section, the composer resigns himself to his fate. He may never have the girl of his dreams, just like Beethoven. Depressed, he tries to overdose on drugs. But do you think he kills himself? Of course not. That would be reaching his goal, and he was too much of a romantic to do that. Instead of dying, he gets high and dreams he murdered his love. But even this dream is unfulfilled, because in the fifth and final movement, his girlfriend comes back to haunt him as a witch. Many of the composers for piano tried to fuse music with literary ideas as well. Listen to this piece by Robert Schumann called Child Falling Asleep. It starts out troubled yet subdued, as if the child was having a hard time getting to sleep and was tossing and turning. Certain notes come out louder than others. You'll hear them. The music then moves to a very pleasant section, as if the child were recalling happy events of the past day. Finally, the piece drifts off, getting softer and slower, until it finally stops, as if the child had fallen asleep in the middle of a thought. Listen to A Child Falling Asleep and see if you can hear all three sections. The child tossing and turning at the beginning, the child having pleasant thoughts of the day in the middle, and then slowly drifting away. not all the composers of the Romantic period were caught up in the Beethoven complex the way Berlioz, Liszt, and Wagner were. Another very great composer of this period was Johannes Brahms. He resented the direction those composers were taking music. He resented the self-pity and unrestrained passion of these men and others. In contrast, Brahms too felt to be in the shadow of Beethoven, but reacted to it in a more restrained, classical fashion. Many of his works are written in a more intimate manner. He rarely resorts to excessive displays of emotion or anything else. Listen to this gentle and famous waltz of his. Brahms rarely wrote program music. His music is what is called absolute music, which means it has no literary allusions, only musical ones. Earlier we discussed how the increase in travel and communication may have led to many composers seeking a uniquely nationalistic style. To achieve this, some composers used national folk dances that were unique to their country. Frédéric Chopin did this. He composed many mazurkas and polonaises, Polish dances. The polonaise was a stately dance where the people at the grand ball could walk around slowly and show off their fancy clothes. Listen to a portion of one of Chopin's most famous polonaises. The polonaise in A flat. Can you imagine people showing off their fancy clothes to this fancy music? Another device composers used to glorify and popularize their country was the popular device we have already discussed, literary association. Edvard Grieg, the great Norwegian composer, used mythological characters from Norway in this piece called Elfin Dance. As we listen to it, what images come to your mind? Can you see little elves dancing on mushrooms deep in the Norwegian forest? Can you hear them scamper away at the end? We have discussed several musical trends of the Romantic period. The first was the Beethoven complex, reaching for the unobtainable, which striving led to greater emotional expression, bigger orchestras, bigger pieces, bigger instruments, and expanded use of tonal colors and harmonies. Bigger everything. The second trend we discussed was the Romantic's desire to associate literature with music. Program music was in. As an example of program music, we listened to A Child Falling Asleep by Robert Schumann. In contrast, we listened to a composer who reacted to the excesses of Romanticism. His name was Johannes Brahms. No program music from this man. Absolute music was his forte. We listened to his waltz with no literary associations at all. We also discussed the Romantic's tendency toward a national style of music. As mentioned before, because of the Industrial Revolution, more people had more money to spend. Many spent that on pianos for their homes and music to play on it. As the market for music increased, so did the demand for composers and musicians. The list of good composers in the Romantic period, as compared to the Classic or Baroque, is huge. I will list some of them by country. In France, we had Hector Berlioz and César Franck. From Hungary, Franz Liszt. Germany produced Richard Strauss, Robert Schumann, Johannes Brahms, Gustav Mahler, Richard Wagner, and Felix Mendelssohn. From Poland, Frédéric Chopin. Czechoslovakia, Bedřich Smetana, Antonín Dvořák. Scandinavia, Edvard Grieg. The United States, Edward McDowell. Austria, Schubert. Russia, Rimsky-Korsakov, Modeste Mussorgsky, Peter Tchaikovsky, Anton Rubinstein. Spain, Granados, Defala. Italy, Giuseppe Verdi and Rossini, and many others from other countries. And now for our brief quiz. Pause the tape after each question to give yourself time to answer. Question 1. During the Romantic period, did things tend to get bigger or smaller? Question 2. Why didn't the United States produce any great composers during the Romantic period? Question 3. How did the Industrial Revolution affect music in the Romantic period? Question 4. What is program music? Question 5. What is the Beethoven complex? Question 6. Name a way Chopin used the piano to achieve different tonal colors. How did you do? If you missed any questions, you may want to listen to the tape again. If you answered them all correctly, you are a very good listener. If you would like to learn more about the Romantic period and its music, you may study the composer tapes offered through Music Wonderful Music. Happy listening!